It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you so much for joining me this morning as we roll through August. First story this morning. It's about wetlands and tiling and easements and restrictions, and a bond made almost 100 years ago between people who bought the federal duck stamp, it actually came into being in 1935, and willing landowners who put easements on their property, to which today has led to millions of acres of small wetlands being secured, particularly on the prairies, breeding grounds of North America, the United States, most notably North and South Dakota, Montana, Minnesota, Northern Iowa, which is the cradle of bird life, as you've heard me talk so often about on the air. So this voluntary wetlands, small wetlands easement program is largely funded by purchase of the federal duck stamp, which hunters since 1935 in America, if you're 16 years old, you've been purchasing it, started out as a dollar, and well, now it's 25 times that amount. And it has provided millions of dollars in funding to permanently protect wetlands. So under the small wetlands easement program, a landowner voluntarily can go to the Fish and Wildlife Service and say, I would like to be paid to put an easement on my property, a portion of my property, which has wetlands on it, because I don't want to drain them or I can't farm them. And I'd love to get some remuneration for doing that. And the small easement program came into being. The only criteria that was really important was that those wetlands could never be diminished or damaged. So landowners did this voluntarily. And by the way, landowners are still lining up voluntarily to do this. There are more landowners who want to put their properties, portions of their properties, in the small wetlands easement program than there is funding to pay for it. It's an extremely popular program with landowners. Everything's been going great for the past, since 1935 when the program started. It's been the most successful thing the Fish and Wildlife Service has done to save wetlands. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a rule for comment was proposed by the Fish and Wildlife Service that would weaken what it means to drain a wetland or impact a wetland. And the key point here is that when a landowner decided they wanted to get paid to preserve a wetland on their property, they said that they would never impact that wetland, never drain it. It could be farmed in dry years, could have cattle graze on it in dry years, but it could not be drained. Well, as technology has advanced, and I talked about this again a few weeks ago, now there is the ability for drainage tiles that are really powerful to be placed in the ground that basically sucks the moisture away, not just from above the tile, but actually from a fair distance away from the tile. So it's a little bit like having a leaking pipe under a pool. And you've got a pool that is going to be draining because there is a crack in the bottom of the pool and it's going into a pipe. That's what happens with the tiles. So a landowner could place a tile 100 yards, 50 yards, not everything's the same, from an existing wetland, and that tile, because it's perforated, would drain the wetland. Landowners are saying they should have the right to do that. But easements exist on many of these properties, which prohibits that. So the Fish and Wildlife Service, for some reason, which the conservation community and others really don't understand at all, decided it would be a good idea to weaken the law to enable landowners to actually place tiles in the ground that then take the water out of these wetlands for which landowners were paid by us, people who purchased the federal duck stamp and other means to protect. What the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Secretary of the Interior and the administration did not count on or see coming was an absolute avalanche of unanimity opposing this idea. I've been in the conservation world a long time. I have never seen the conservation community come together the way it just did to try to stop a rule from being changed. every organization that has been involved in wetlands preservation weighed in. Not only did organizations weigh in, people from across the country weighed in, and I personally know the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Secretary of Interior were besieged with letters and phone calls and emails that came in saying, don't you dare do this. And interestingly, some of that came from some of the biggest financial supporters of this administration. They happen to be duck hunters. They happen to be people who love wetlands. They happen to be people who like conservation. And the notion that this administration would actually change the law to fundamentally undermine the bond that's been in place since 1935 was abhorrent to them and to all of us. And so the administration basically went, whoa, we had no idea that this many people felt this strongly about it. And this many people who matter felt this strongly about it. So the lobby that's been trying to do this is a small group of farmers, landowners, if you will, from primarily the Dakotas. It happens to be that Secretary of the Interior, Doug Burgum, is from the Dakotas. So he was influenced by interests, agricultural interests, that wanted to get rid of the wetlands easement program or vastly weaken it. What the administration has found out is this is the holy grail. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. If you want to take away the protections of these easements that have been in place voluntarily and are binding, then you are going to face huge consequences. So the result is, as of right now, the Fish and Wildlife Service has put on hold this proposed rule change. Whether it sticks, we'll find out. But it is wonderful to see the conservation community come together to do this. But at the same time, it's really sad to think the conservation community has to come together in such a way to spend energy and time and money to defend something that it already thought was a great success. And frankly, none of us saw the flank attack, if you will, to try to undo what has been a legally binding, highly successful program. We didn't see it coming, but the conservation community has rallied together and has basically said, this isn't going to happen. Again, the sad thing is we have to take the time to do this instead of trying to have more successes. And in saying that, the bond and the working relationship between agriculture and the conservation community is really strong. And many individuals in agriculture also spoke up and said, this is a terrible idea. So let's hope it stays there, going back to be buried, not to resurface, that we do not see a change in our small wetlands easement program. It would be the single most detrimental thing that could be done for wetlands conservation in America. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the great outdoors. When I do, I'm going to talk a little bit about Lake Mead and Lake Powell. Yes, they're a long way from Chicago, but interestingly, they really do affect us. I'm also going to talk about an individual who sacrificed a large portion of his ranch to benefit others when the fires hit the West. And yet the Washington Post found a way to somehow criticize this individual who gave up thousands of acres. Don't understand that at all. I'll be back in just a moment with much more in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
If It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me this morning. Moving on, water. We've had a lot of water here in the Midwest, and next week I'm going to talk about the Metropolitan Stormwater Management District in Chicago and what they have done with the Chicago, as they call it, the Chicago water pits, and how that is dramatically reducing flooding downstate, down the Illinois River, and also helping keep Lake Michigan clean. Just the opposite is occurring in the West. The nation's largest reservoirs are drying up. Lake Mead is the nation's largest reservoir and is a vital source of water for more than 25 million people across the American Southwest. And it's dwindled to its lowest level ever known in a region that is absolutely struggling with terrible drought. Not only is Lake Mead at a record level low, so is Lake Powell, just upstream. These two river systems are the absolute lifeblood for much of the Western United States. And should they continue to fall, they will reach the point where there actually is no water capable of coming out of them. And tens of millions of people in the southwestern part of the United States, think Phoenix, think California, are not going to have any water. And so this is something that we've talked about on the air. You may read about occasionally, but it's for real. And why is it for real? Because the states in the upper river basin, which are Colorado and New Mexico and Utah and Wyoming, the states in the lower Colorado River basin, Arizona, California, Nevada, the upper river basin collects the water and passes it south. They actually have rights to that water too, and they haven't been taking all of it. Meanwhile, Arizona, California, Nevada have been taking far more water than they're supposed to take. So the issue is, and this blew up recently when the federal government announced a decree that would reallocate the water, and you heard, if you didn't hear it from Arizona, you're going to, and California, it said, you guys are taking too much water. It's not a question of there being enough water. There isn't enough water, and you can't take so much. So the states further up provide the water, and the states further down take it. But if the states further up take the water they're entitled to, there's even going to be less for California, Arizona, and Nevada. So when you think of all the development taking place in those three states, think of this. The water is a very finite resource, and we're running out. And we're running out to the point where people actually will literally run out of water, and there won't be any. So Lake Mead was first flooded in the 1930s. After the construction of the world's largest dam at the time, the Hoover Dam. It's a concrete, my God, it's a colossus. It stands taller than the Space Needle in Seattle and taller than the Great Way Arch in St. Louis. At full capacity, the reservoir sits at more than 1,220 feet above sea level. On Sunday, it was at 1,040 feet. It is down 200 feet. 200 feet in depth, covering thousands of acres. That's a lot of water. If the water drops by another 5 feet, and the projections are, if this is not a big winter, it will, the hydropower generators would actually be turned off. There would be no more hydropower generation coming out of the dam. So the whole thing is on the verge of collapse. And yet the politicians in the West are trying to wring more water when there is none. So we sit here in Chicago with some of the most plentiful water on earth. We got the Great Lakes. We've got Lake Michigan. Now, if you're in a western suburb, you've heard me say before, and you don't have rights to Lake Michigan water, you might have water problems. But basically, in the upper Midwest, we have all the water that we're going to need. We forget that there are parts of the country that have nowhere near the amount of water they're going to need. And eventually, I think somehow this becomes our problem. Even though it's 1,000 miles away and people have gone and chosen to live there, I just have this sense, as I do with the Great Salt Lake, that when the catastrophe hits, if it hits, that all Americans are going to be asked to help find a problem. And I don't know what that solution is, but it's going to become our problem whether we like it or not. Last couple minutes of the show, absolutely incredible how the Washington Post, and I just, because they did this, I'm going to say the Washington Post, but some journalists in general can get a story wrong. There's an individual who is the Undersecretary of Agriculture for Natural Resources and the Environment. His name is Mike Boren. He happens to be a good friend of mine. He happens to be also an individual who is absolutely dedicating much of his life to trying to make the U.S. Forest Service operate better and to stop wildfires. So a few weeks ago, a fire erupted in Idaho. It happened to be close to Mike Boren's ranch. Mike Boren sacrificed thousands of acres on his ranch to fire because he did not think it would look right for him to have federal resources come onto his property to fight a fire on his property when other ranches were also at peril. So he, in fact, did not use the full resources of the federal government to stop the fire on his property. And it burned thousands of acres of his ranch. And he did so so that they could set up resources on other properties to try to stop what ultimately became almost an 800,000-acre fire known as the Big Grass Fire, which you heard me speak about, which has done just horrific damage in Idaho, Nevada, eastern Oregon. But the Washington Post said that he used his influence to unduly try to stop the fire on his own property. I can tell you that's absolutely not true. And when you read things in the press that often criticize people, there's generally another story. In this case, I happen to know firsthand the other story. And what Mike Boren did, he used his personal resources. He helped get people food and shelter. He used airplanes. He did everything he could as a private citizen to try to help his fellow ranchers. And the one thing he did not do, even though he could have in his position, was use public resources to save his own ranch. And yet the Washington Post somehow inexplicably thinks that he did that. And it's just dead wrong. And it's yet another example of why really good people really don't want to go into public service because they don't get a break, even if they're trying to do the right thing. And in this case, not only did Mike Boren try to do the right thing, he sacrificed his own portions of his own ranch so that others wouldn't lose their ranch. But the Washington Post doesn't care to report about that, which is why sometimes I'm cynical about what you read in the newspaper or online now or what you see on TV. There's generally a backstory. And if people like Mike Boren are involved, who are dedicated public servants who left the private sector to go to try to help something like the U.S. Forest Service, I think I believe their side of the story. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.